It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details.
Save big money at
shop the best Black Friday weekend deals up to 70% off only at Tanger Outlets. Save big at Crocs, Old Navy Outlet, American Eagle Outfitters, Kay Jewelers, and hundreds more. Find something for everyone on your list during our biggest sale of the year. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Stores open at 6 a.m. Black Friday. Get your savings at Tanger.com. Big time deals on big name brands.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, November 26th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, let's kick things off with some relatively breaking news. This just happened a little while ago as we record this. So tell me what the latest news is regarding the upcoming Star Wars series Skeleton Crew.
Indeed. So Star Wars Skeleton Crew is the show that's been in the works from John Watts, who you might know as the man behind the Tom Holland Spider-Man trilogy. This takes place roughly during the Mandalorian period of the Star Wars timeline. Not to say that it is necessarily going to have those characters in it, but it is of that same period, the New Republic era, if you will. So originally the idea was this show was going to premiere on Tuesdays, but Disney and Lucasfilm have announced that the first two episodes of Skeleton Crew will now premiere on December 2nd, which is Monday, December 2nd. So that is a little less than a week from now. And they've also revealed who is directing each of the eight episodes. So, on December 2nd, you are going to get a two-episode premiere with episode one directed by John Watts himself, and episode two directed by Mr. David Lowery. And then on December 10th, you will get episode three, also directed by Mr. David Lowery. And December 7th, you will get episode four directed by the Daniels, a.k.a. the Oscar-winning directors behind Everything Everywhere All at Once. On December 24th, as in Christmas Eve, you will get episode 5 directed by Drake Schreier. I'm so sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. On December 31st, New Year's Eve, you will get episode 6 directed by Bryce Dallas Howard, who has become very familiar with these Disney Plus Star Wars shows. January 7th, episode 7, you will get an episode directed by Lee Isaac Chung. I'm sorry. And then on January 14th, you will get the final episode once again directed by Mr. John Watts. And that is the layout of Star Wars Skeleton Crew.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah, the name Jake Schreier did not sound, it sounded familiar and I couldn't place what that was. Evidently, he directed several episodes of Beef, the Netflix series. And then the reason that I know his name primarily is because he's the director of the upcoming Thunderbolts movie for Marvel. So,
yes. And I believe he directed, if I'm not mistaken, he directed a very charming little movie called Robot and Frank some time ago.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. Seek that out if you have. It's a very, very charming little movie that not a lot of people saw, but that is a murderer's row of directors. If those names didn't stand out to you, David Lowery, the man behind stuff like The Green Knight and the best Disney live action remake, Pete's Dragon. So, I mean, that him and Star Wars to me just sounds like, you know, I can't wait to see what that looks like. But
very cool. Okay, so that's next Monday, and I think next Monday we're going to be talking about at least the first couple episodes of the show, and then I think we're going to, hopefully, fingers crossed, if all goes according to plan, have a couple of interviews with some of the folks who were responsible for bringing that show to life, including maybe Jude Law. So stay tuned for that. So you mentioned John Watts there. He's one of the creative minds behind Skeleton Crew. And John Watts is also the director of Wolfs, the Apple TV Plus or Apple Original Films movie that came out earlier this year that starred George Clooney and Brad Pitt. And there was word when that first movie came out that a Wolfs 2 was going to be in the works. And apparently that's not happening. And I thought John Watts's quote about this was very interesting because he says, I wasn't even told about the streaming release until less than a week before Apple announced it to the world. I was completely shocked and asked them to please not include the news that I was writing a sequel. They ignored my request and announced it in their press release anyway, seemingly to create a positive spin to their streaming pivot. And so I quietly returned the money they gave me for the sequel. So, wow. That, I mean, it's very rare for filmmakers to speak in such blunt terms about deal making and behind the scenes stuff, especially when there's like a disagreement with a major studio like this or a major producer of movies and TV. So I just thought that was really notable. And I think we talked about this when Wolves came out. It was supposed to have like a big theatrical release, and then Apple basically pulled the plug on that. I think it still came out in a few theaters here and
there. It was an extremely minimal release because I was very interested in this movie. And I didn't really think the Draft House out near me in Austin had a couple of showings, but it wasn't. Yeah, boy, was I like, I mean, I wasn't happy about what happened, but I was very happy about how transparent John Watts was about it.
Yeah.
You don't often get that kind of transparency in this business. And I think it says an awful lot about just how burned he felt by this, because he essentially burned that bridge with Apple. Like, he's not working with them. You know what I mean? Like, that's, you don't generally go, like, in the same way that Zack Snyder's probably not working with Warner Brothers again. Like, you know, it's, I don't know. I was impressed by his candidness here.
Yeah, it's just really rare for people to burn bridges publicly. And of course, there's always the chance that people make up and stuff. Obviously, like, money overrules ego a lot of times in Hollywood. So if there's money to be made and both parties can agree on something in the future, I wouldn't be surprised to see them work together again. But
well,
after
and also
a comment
regimes,
like that.
Yeah, sorry, regimes can change, things like that. But also, but I do think, though, one of the appeals of Apple, which we've talked about a lot this year, you know, as you folks listening probably know me from box office ramblings, is that, you know, stuff like Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, these are movies that they were able to lure guys like Ridley Scott and Martin Scorsese by offering them not only money to make projects they couldn't have made otherwise, but hey, we'll also put this in theaters. And, you know, those got big releases. And I think that that was also probably what lured John Watts there. Let's not forget that John Watts is not directing Spider-Man 4. He is not directing Fantastic Four, as he was supposed to do at one point. Like, he took on other things, including Skeleton Crew, which we just talked about, and this. And I think the promise of a theatrical release probably is what got him in the door there. You know, so yeah. And all due respect, when you have Brad Pitt and George Clooney reuniting in a movie, I think that's a fair expectation. You know, so yeah, I mean, whether or not it was contractual or whatever, like, you know, if that was the agreed upon thing, he has every right to be pissed about it. And, you know, I think it's a bit, it's cool to see a guy with this standing in Hollywood right now take a stance like that, to be like, nope, I would rather give you this money back and say no, you know, because it's easy to let money win, right? Like, I don't know. It's cool that he sort of so publicly was like, nope, I don't. And so I don't know. I think broadly speaking, I'm curious if this does anything to Apple's reputation with filmmakers. Like, yep. Is this going to be harmful in the way that some of what Warner Brothers did with canceling some of those movies, where people probably have at least a bit of hesitation when they go work with Warner Brothers now? So it's interesting.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's the question that I don't know if we're going to get answers to, because it's going to be one of those things that's like talked about among creatives in hushed tones or whatever. And it's kind of like an unmeasurable impact that it might have. You know, you'd have to like do a poll, an anonymous poll of people in the creative community to get like the real truth behind whether or not something like that would really keep people from working with Apple. But I don't know, man, it's like, it's tough because I imagine a lot of people would want to take a stand and support John Watts and this type of thing. But at the same time, like with consolidation happening in the industry and with like, everybody being so trigger happy after the strikes and stuff, like, I kind of think like the studios are in a power position right now where the, you know, the, I mean, even more so than usual, where things are just not being made at the scale that they were being made before. So it takes a lot for somebody to stand up and actually put their money where their mouth is and say like, hey, I'm not doing a thing that could get a project made, which is really what most creative people just want more than anything. It's just like the ability to make the art that they want to make. So yeah, interesting stuff there. So before we take a break, I wanted to mention that Denzel Washington, who's been out on the press tour doing the rounds for Gladiator 2, he mentioned offhandedly in an Esquire article or an interview, I think, that he said, I told him I would do another Equalizer and we're doing 4 and 5. More people are happy about that. People love those daggone Equalizers, which I love that as a quote. What's your relationship like to the Equalizer franchise, Ryan?
So I haven't gotten around to Equalizer 3, even though I am currently kind of on an extended vacation of sorts back home in Arizona, and I brought a huge stack of Blu-rays with me, and in that stack of Blu-rays is finally the Equalizer 3, because I love the Equalizer 1 and 2. Denzel is one of the best actors alive, but I've always been very fond of him in fuck people up mode, with like Man on Fire being the premier example of that. Here's my only thing. Denzel is, I believe, 69, about to turn 70 years old. He has been flirting with retirement. What I'm curious about is, and I speculated a bit about this, I wrote the piece up for us about this, I would guess if he's saying we're doing 4 and 5, they might do one of those things where they film 2 back-to-back. You know, where they just kind of bang them both out because it's cheaper. Denzel's a busy guy. If you can get the script together, if you can do that, like, and then you kind of maybe have a part 1 and part 2 or whatever. But I mean, hell yeah. Like, the more Denzel does for as long as he's willing to do it, the better off we are as a society. Like, I feel that strongly about the man. So, like, if he feels like he wants to do more Equalizer movies, hell yeah, let's have more Equalizer movies. That's how I feel.
Okay, so between the two of us, we have seen all 3 Equalizer movies, because I've only seen the 3rd one. It's a really weird thing that I did, where I never do that. I always start at the beginning, but for some reason I had my AMC A-list was like burning a hole in my pocket when that movie came out in theaters. And I was like, you know what, let's go for it. I think I can probably catch up and understand what's going on without having actually seen these first 2 movies. And I really enjoyed the 3rd one. And now I do plan to go back and watch the first 2 at some point. I'll probably do that right before number 4 comes out.
I know we don't have a ton of time, but how did that play for you, seeing only the 3rd one and not the first 2?
Very well. Like, especially because the 3rd one kind of rules. I really enjoyed the experience, and Dakota Fanning was in there. She had a small role, so it was a nice little Man on Fire reunion between the two of them. So yeah, I feel like there was like one allusion to a photograph of like Melissa Leo's character, who I remembered from the trailer of the first movie or something, that like maybe I didn't get all of the emotional context that I needed, but I definitely got all of the logical context. So it's not like these movies are super complicated from what I gather. So
no, I do like that
Denzel messing people up.
Yeah, it's a very simple premise of like, dude, sort of morally gray guy messes up much worse guys.
It was like an old Western, basically. It was like Denzel comes to this Italian town and there's like gang warfare, and he steps in to like protect the little guy, basically. And it's just like super satisfying. So 4 and 5, 2 more Equalizer movies coming. Bring them on, I say. So all right, let's take a break and then we'll come back. We have a few more news items to talk about.
Shop the best Black Friday weekend deals up to 70% off only at Tanger Outlets. Save big at Crocs, Old Navy Outlet, American Eagle Outfitters, Kay Jewelers, and hundreds more. Find something for everyone on your list during our biggest sale of the year. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Stores open at 6 a.m. Black Friday. Get your savings at Tanger.com. Big time deals on big name brands. Shop the best Black Friday weekend deals up to 70% off only at Tanger Outlets. Save big at Crocs, Old Navy Outlet, American Eagle Outfitters, Kay Jewelers, and hundreds more. Find something for everyone on your list during our biggest sale of the year. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Stores open at 6 a.m. Black Friday. Get your savings at Tanger.com. Big time deals on big name brands.
All right, Daniel Craig is going to potentially be starring in a DC superhero movie. I was not expecting that statement to be a true thing in the year 2024, especially after what's happened to the superhero movie subgenre, or whatever you want to call it, at large over the past year or so. But this is just such a bizarre pairing of actor and director and material, Ryan. So Luca Guadagnino, who directed Challengers earlier this year, he has a movie called Queer that stars Daniel Craig that's coming out pretty soon. It's like made the festival run and is being talked about in awards capacities and stuff like that. The two of those guys are teaming up to potentially write and direct and work on a Sergeant Rock movie for DC Studios for James Gunn and Peter Safran, what they've got going on over there. And yeah, just a like I said, a super bizarre pairing. What do you know about Sergeant Rock as a character?
Not a lot. I'm not as big of a DC guy as I am a Marvel guy, historically speaking. I think with DC, although I will say this fits the bill of the DC stuff I tend to read when I do, which is stuff that's a little divorced of the main universe, like Watchmen and certain things like that. But the one thing I do know is that Bruce Campbell's actually a very big fan of Sergeant Rock. And a couple of years ago, he wrote Sergeant Rock versus the Army of the Dead, you know, like a 6-issue miniseries for DC. But Sergeant Rock is very much just like this brooding sort of, you know, military type guy. And it feels like it would fit in sort of with the Suicide Squad universe that James Gunn has kind of set up over there. And it's an odd thing. Like, can I picture Daniel Craig? I can picture Daniel Craig doing just about anything, let's put it that way. But, you know, especially after seeing him in, like, Logan Lucky and what he does with, like, Joe Bang in that movie after doing Bond. So, like, would he be who I would picture as Sergeant Rock off the top of my head? No. But, you know, okay, sure. Like, I would picture more like Kevin Durand or something, but whatever. Like, the thing that throws me here for a big fat loop is Luca. Does he just need a money gig? Like, I hate to put it that way, but like, is that, no, I'm not trying to be, but like, you do see that where like these guys will sometimes direct something bigger and flashier to kind of, you know, keep the, you know, so that maybe they can go do another Call Me By Your Name or something, right? Like, I don't know, but it just is such a bizarre fit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Luca is like maybe one of the most sensual filmmakers working today in terms of like being able to translate sensuality on screen. And that is just not what I think of when I think about a character who is essentially like the best soldier in the world. It just does not. The tonality that Luca is sort of traffics in as a filmmaker just does not jive with what I imagine to be this sort of like down and dirty, gritty war film, basically. So I'm just so curious at like, is he going to cram Sergeant Rock into his filmmaking style, or is he going to completely upend his own filmmaking style and meet what the character is supposed to be or has traditionally been or whatever. Either way, I think either of those two outcomes is going to be really interesting to watch.
Yeah. I think the thing is that like what we've seen from Luca so far, I've got to say, like, I'm not his number one fan. Like I have said it several times before. That Suspiria remake is one of the most unpleasant things I've ever sat through in my life. But, I respect the guy a lot. And the one thing I will say is that he's a bold filmmaker, and it's not fair to put people in a box, right? Like, the people can surprise you. And, you know, maybe we just haven't seen something like this from him yet. And the only other thing I would say is that I think James Gunn has been incredibly clear about, like, anything that enters development at DC Studios is not necessarily something that will get a green light, you know, because they're very strict about it. What it seems like the process is, we take a pitch. We like this pitch. You go write the script. If we like the script, you get a green light. If the script doesn't come together, that doesn't happen. They're not like rushing to meet release dates over there, it doesn't seem like. So, you know, so maybe this is just one of those things where, because didn't they just work together, Luca and Daniel Craig, isn't one of the award season movies one of theirs together?
Queer is that, Queer, that's that right, movie. Queer. And also, I should mention that Justin Kariscus, who wrote Challengers, and he was on this podcast earlier this year to talk about that movie, he also wrote Queer, and then he is also teaming up, like a reteaming with these guys to write Sergeant Rock. So that trio is sort of moving along together.
Got it. But I guess my point is that, like, so clearly they had a, you know, a good working relationship or whatever, and so they maybe went in and said, and hey, we've got this little opportunity here maybe to, you know, so why don't we go pitch this thing? Gunn and Saffron like the pitch, and they go, okay, go write the script. And then, but maybe this takes forever to actually, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, it's a slower process. So, you know, who knows if it actually happens, but I am, the longer I am in this, the more when something like this hits my brain wrong when I first hear it, I'm more curious about it. Where I'm like, okay, that's weird. Let's see what happens. You know, because I think especially as the superhero movie thing, you know, begins to tire out a little bit, at least like the what used to be sort of passable for superhero stuff, you got to do interesting stuff with comic book movies to keep them going. This is certainly interesting. So, hey, man, Daniel Craig at this point is kind of one of those guys that can kind of pick and choose what he wants. If this is what he wants to do, I've got to imagine there's a reason.
Yeah. Okay. So going from something that seems really fascinating to something that is just completely uninteresting to me, which is a live action remake of How to Train Your Dragon. Dean DeBlois, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, is one of the directors of the original animated movie, and he is coming back to direct this live action version. And the trailer, the first teaser trailer, has arrived. I think we talked about this when the original announcement came out, but the teaser trailer has kind of confirmed my worst fears about this, Ryan, which is that it looks essentially like a shot for shot remake of the original movie so far anyway. And I genuinely don't see the point of doing this, especially because the Toothless character, it looks exactly the same. Like, they might as well have just ported over the animated version. I mean, I know it's like a CG character and there's different textures and stuff like that, but like, it looks almost exact. And so you've got Gerard Butler reprising his voice role as the lead character Hiccup, his father Stoic the Vast. So like, I guess there's like some sort of novelty element of seeing Gerard Butler reprise that role, but in like a physical form this time. It has an all new cast aside from that, as far as I can tell. But yeah, I'm so depressed at the idea that Disney's live action remaking of their animated classics has now spilled over into what DreamWorks is doing, because if this movie performs well, which most of the Disney live action remakes have, then I just think the floodgates are going to be fully opened for more of this kind of stuff. And it's just so creatively uninteresting to me. But I don't know. Am I being too harsh? What did you think of this teaser?
So I don't have a huge relationship to these movies. I saw the first one. I thought it was charming enough. I never really followed up with the others. I know a lot of people really like them. It just, you know, whatever. I might revisit them someday. I will say this. I am interested in the idea that the same director is involved. I was charmed by the teaser. I think that I've seen the side-by-side shots of the live action, quote-unquote live action, Toothless against the animated. I think people are being a little hard on that. Like, I think that it definitely has a little bit more live action texture to it. It has a little bit more, yes, it looks the same because people love Toothless. I'm okay with that. Like, there was a quote that Dean had run around saying that he's, you know, someone asked him, like, you know, why'd you do this? He goes, they were going to do it with or without me, so I wanted to make sure they did it right. And, you know, like,
Man, that's so interesting. I'm sorry to interrupt you. That was my fear of why he did this. It reminded me a lot of The Matrix Resurrections, where Lana Wachowski, that was essentially her reasoning for making that movie, was because Warner Brothers literally came to her and said, we are going to make another Matrix movie. Do you want to be a part of it or not? And she decided to do that. And she was able to put her artistic spin on it in an interesting way that like didn't fully work for me, but this is not necessarily a conversation about Matrix Resurrections.
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
I was kind of worried that DreamWorks came to him and said the same thing. And I understand that he would want to be the person to say, like, all right, well, if this is going to happen regardless, then I want to be able to at least oversee this and kind of put my make sure that like it's taken care of because this is my baby type of thing. But man, I am kind of bummed to hear him actually come out and say it like that.
I don't know. I think things are what you make it. I think that, look, the movie business is a business, and I say this stuff all the time and it's unsexy and people hate me for it, but I think what happens is sometimes commerce can drive fantastic pieces of art. I remember when I heard they were Sony was making an animated Spider-Man movie, and I'm like, well, that seems like low-hanging fruit cash grab stuff. And then Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse happened. And then I remember, you know, before that, same guys involved, but, you know, oh, they're making the Lego movie. Why on earth would you do that? And then the Lego movie is incredibly charming. I understand it's animation, you could, you know, but what I'm saying is that, like, it's, you know, or like, okay, going back to something I said earlier, they're remaking Pete's Dragon live action. Why on earth would you do that? Well, because it's absolutely wonderful. You know, so I don't know. I found the trailer to be a bit charming and whatever. Like, and the other thing too is that, like, in the age where comic book movies are no longer as reliable as they once were, and you can't get an Oppenheimer every day, studios have to do something to keep the lights on in some way, and you've got to have some surefire bankable things to help keep theaters open, to help fund other things. If this is a viable path forward where you can remake, you know, beloved animated classics from a decade ago, okay, great. You know, like, I'm not, if it's good, at least, don't get me wrong, if they suck and they're creatively bankrupt, like, that's another thing entirely, but some of these live action remakes have been really good. You know, I look at, like, Cinderella, that 2015 Cinderella, very good, I think. You know, so I don't know. I think if it can be good, I'm at least willing to give it a chance. Like, I don't want to sit here and just start poo-pooing it right out of the gate. So, you know, I understand that I am probably fighting the tide on that one, but that's how I feel about it.
All right. Well, the only thing that I would say in terms of maybe keeping a sliver of positivity is I was thinking similar things about Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, which was the reverse, what I thought would be the reverse of this situation, which was going to be an animated version of the Scott Pilgrim live action movie that Edgar Wright made 14 years ago now. And then that was obviously based on a comic series. And that ended up being this incredible thing, this incredible spin riff on that subject matter, where the first episode of that Netflix series was essentially what you would expect from it. And then it veered off into this totally interesting direction and kept the sort of spirit of the story intact. But the narrative itself was wildly different than anything we'd seen in any other iteration of Scott Pilgrim before. And I just wish that DreamWorks and the filmmakers here had the ability to go in a direction like that. I mean, maybe there's a chance that they tell a different story this time and they're just relying and leaning on familiar imagery to get people in the door. That's my hope of all hopes in this scenario, is that, like, maybe they'll be able to smuggle in something fascinating. But and that's kind of my hope for all of these live action remakes, is like, we have the original, it's right there. Be creative enough to come up with another, like, a real reason to do this in live action other than just translating it beat for beat and, you know, physicalizing it, for lack of a better term. So we'll see how that goes. I admire your optimism as always, Ryan. And I hope that you're right at the end of the day on this one. But,
I've never been so subtly insulted in my life.
No,
that, as always, was doing a lot of work there, Ben.
No, you know what I mean. We talk about all the time, and you always have more of a glass half full approach. So I respect it. I wish I could bring myself to have that mentality. So I'll try to work on that maybe as
But I was talking to one of our fellow writers, Jeremy, the other day, and Jeremy Mathai, and I, you know, like I said, you know, we were talking about, you know, how I'd rewatch Gladiator, and I'm like, man, this movie's still really great. And talking about how a lot of these, you know, a lot of my favorite movies of all time are just your basic vanilla favorite movies, like Jurassic Park, Star Wars, Die Hard. And I'm like, I'm one of those guys. I like popcorn for the masses entertainment when it's done well. So I think that I am, like, sort of automatically calibrated to sort of embrace those things, you know, perhaps a little more than people who have been doing what I've been doing for 10 years, who there seems to be, like, you know, you get hard edges around these things. And mm-hmm. for whatever reason, I'm just still, like, you know, I'm still willing to embrace that stuff, or at least I'm not willing to shit on it right out of the gate. I don't know. So.
Yeah. All right. So real quick, the last thing I wanted to mention is this morning it was announced that Charlize Theron is set to join the cast of Christopher Nolan's mystery movie at Universal. We're not sure exactly what this is going to be. There have been a lot of different rumors about what the project actually is. As far as I know, nobody knows for sure.
Nothing has been confirmed.
Yeah. So the movie's coming out on July 17th, 2026. And I'm just going to read some of the names that are in this movie now. So you got Matt Damon, Tom Holland, Anne Hathaway, Zendaya, Robert Pattinson, Lupita Nyong'o, and now Charlize Theron, which is pretty much rivals what he did with Oppenheimer. And I'm sure we are far from being done from these announcements. And I'm guessing a lot more A-listers are going to come to play when it comes to Nolan's next movie. So stay tuned. I'm definitely tracking this one eagerly. And I'm sure most people are, or most people listening to this care a lot about that. So
yeah, it's a real shame he can't find any attractive people to be in that movie.
Yeah, real bummer there. All right, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about most of the stories that we mentioned today at slashfilm.com. I will link to a few things in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. We'd really appreciate that. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
Shop the best Black Friday weekend deals up to 70% off only at Tanger Outlets. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and hundreds more. Find something for everyone on your list during our biggest sale of the year. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Stores open at 6 a.m. Black Friday. Get your savings at Tanger.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.